On, and it said,
It says recording.
I don't
It
know.
shows to be recording.
They should have seen you on.
I don't know if it's.
This, and now it's recording. There's the video. So let me.
Are you ready? All right. It's 9 a.m. We can call this meeting to order. If everybody can stand for the invocation. Keith, you mind?
Lord, help us make good decisions for the citizens of the county. Keep protection over all the first responders, police departments, the military. And please give us some rain. Amen.
Amen.
Pledge. I pledge allegiance
to
the United States of America and to the Republic for which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor
to the
Constitution
of the Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible. All right, we have a forum. We've gone through the invocation and the pledge. We'll move down to the public forum. Citizens may address the court and any matters other than matters concerning employee county personnel matters under litigation. Each citizen will be allotted 5 minutes with a total time not to exceed 30. Is there anybody in the room that wishes to? Thank you, none. I don't see anything on that either. All right, we'll move down to the consent agenda. We've got the financial summary from the county treasurer. We've got the bond for precinct one, the report the bond for the treasurer, and approve the minutes for January the 14th, 2025.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda A, B, C, and D.
Got a motion from Commissioner Taylor.
Second.
Second. From Commissioner Weddle, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Rob, I have a little technical difficulty with the speaker system, but we think we got it covered. We'll move down to the road and bridge report. I haven't heard from him this morning.
I haven't either.
All right. I'd make a motion to table the road and bridge report and see if it comes in.
Okay.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right. And we can move down to the updates and actions on grants to include A, B, C, D, and E, SS4A.
So, Councilor, you go and say that SS4A. You can talk about the implementation. I'll speak briefly to the action plan. We're still waiting. The judge is going to get with Ryan Nelson about trying to figure out if there's some way we could draw down some more of those funds from our in kind. Work on that. I haven't heard any report on that in a good while. The implementation grant. All right. You don't like that on that.
So, Mr. Matthews, are y'all on the speaker like the judge is? I've got
yes,
Caroline Dahlia. So, I'm going to say brief, a little bit brief and let her talk for a minute, but you know, the county applies. We didn't make it in, but we had a good bit of feedback from USDOT, and we haven't really shared much of that back and forth, but it is likely that there'll be another proposal that comes out sometime this spring for that next shot at that. While some of the grant programs that are out there probably are going to get reworked pretty hard. I think that one is probably okay. It's more, it's less controversial than some of the others, probably, so it probably survives the cut. So, to the extent the court wants to know about it, I think that Caroline can give you a very short download of what transportation had to say and where we might want to try to improve.
Ms. Austin, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so just in summary, on the 16th, we sat down with Michael Littleman, who went over our application with us, and he gave us a bit of explanation on to what why we weren't awarded funds and what we could improve on if we were to submit again. We were encouraged to resubmit. One thing that they suggested that we consider is putting in a separate planning and demonstration grant application, so then that would be a two-legged application for both implementation and planning and demonstration. He said that our application needs to focus more on vehicle on vehicle or vehicle on pedestrian slash cyclist incidents rather than single vehicle accidents. So to include that documentation. And then for the stream crossing safety projects aspect of our application, they confirmed that that was eligible. They think it was something that flagged from the reviewers. And in the future, if we were to submit that activity, then we would have to be very careful about how we document how flooding leads to those safety challenge and potential casualties. So those were the main points that he brought up in the debrief.
Thank you, ma'am.
Well, Commissioner, we've got a little bit of time, and the court needs to start to consider how you want to proceed. If you're prepared to apply again, if you want us to make changes based off the input we got, based off what y'all want to do, we'd be happy to apply again. We're not, we can keep it under what we have. So it's not a money deal. We can just reapply if y'all want to do that. I think if we could apply for that separate, you know, like you said, there's a two-leg approach, and each of them has its own bucket of money. That's a conversation. I don't think it would be hard to do that, but again, we need some direction from the court. And we've got a little time, but, you know, end of March is not that far off. So at some point, the court should consider what they want to do, and we would be glad to help based off your direction.
I made a note to put that as a discussion before March, and when we have a full court, and go from there. H&P?
No updates.
No updates. RCP?
The Commissioner's Court was going to have another workshop after the meeting when it was originally scheduled for tomorrow. It's my understanding that there's not one scheduled for this afternoon because the judge couldn't confirm that with Brooke Thompson with MRB. I think it's going to be in Mr. Mannix's conversations last week about the project that we think that we ought to go ahead and get with Mr. Bass and outside the Commissioner's Court and sit down and talk to him about our list of things and get him prepared so he doesn't come here, then here for the first time, then have to go back and prepare and come back. And so maybe I think we probably understand most all of the court's questions, concerns, thoughts on changes and things enough that we can give him a list of questions that y'all are going to want answered about what y'all can do and how y'all can do it, if y'all can do it. So I think previously contracted Mr. Bass. I think all that's
fine. I mean, I think it's just a matter of us getting that schedule, sitting down with him, and our floodplain ordinance was reviewed by a engineer at MRB. They thought it was fine, which it is fine. It's just a matter of whether or not y'all want to make any changes to it or not. The only parts of it that's not fine is the person that's designated as the person in charge of it, which, you know, doesn't exist anymore. But well, they still exist. He just doesn't work for us anymore. And so I think that minor if the court is fine with keeping the floodplain requirements the same as they are now, as far as no construction right according to floodway, no residential construction in the zoned areas, even without, you know, not allowing the field and base elevated structures, elevating the base or flood, what do they call it? Elevating the first floor level to a certain height. In some jurisdictions allow construction in the zone shaded areas of the floodplain to heal its elevated. Not in favor of that, but I am in favor of the floodplain maps being accurate, which they aren't, because most of the areas, especially outside the city limits, haven't ever been studied. So it's unstudied. It's just a zone X. It's what they think, and they're based on the old topo maps, and they're not accurate. Some of them are a lot worse than others, and just depending on what area of the county you look at, I mean, you can just look and see. It's like there's no way the floodplain goes up the side of that hill, you know. It's just the way they're overlaid. It's just old stuff, and it hasn't been studied, and hasn't been updated. And I don't know a good way to address all of that, because my personal opinion would be that if it's in one of those areas that's not accurate, then I'll allow them to. But if it's in one of those areas that's we all know it's accurate, and we ought to sure enough not allow it. But I don't know what I don't know what our options are on that. I don't know what the middle ground is on that. I certainly want people to be able to do reasonable things with their property that does not adversely affect others. But I certainly don't want them building a house in a sure enough floodplain either, because I know what that requires us to do later is go rescue them and, everything around them. So, I don't know if that's something y'all are going to have to think about, but I don't know. That's not a vast question. That's probably and I don't even know that it's really an engineer question. It's probably if they have a good floodplain administrator type engineer at MRB that can come, I think that would be a pretty short conversation for y'all to just kind of have that conversation with them about their thoughts on that and what other jurisdictions do. And then at some point we're going to have to still sit down and talk through all of those other little lists of things that the county can do that was on that RCP considerations list for a long time. Had a list of things that the county can regulate if they choose to, like setbacks, building setback lines on county roads. That is something the court can approve. Consideration of subdivisions, just plain old building setback lines on county roads, the court has the authority to approve. There was some seems like there's one about game rooms. There seems like there's two or three, other more than two or three, but there's just a few there at the bottom of that list that fall outside of, like the big four or five, some of these regulations, RV parks, multi-family dwellings, things like that. There's a few other little things there that the regulations will be pretty simple to draft. It's just a matter of yay or nay whether y'all are interested in them or not. So we do need to have another workshop. We have things to talk about, whether it's related, whether VAS can be there, whether the engineer can be there. We do have other things, decision points we can make, and we can stretch them off our list and focus on them, whatever will. So whenever y'all are ready, That meeting with Mr. Bass, do you think he'd come to Coryell or would we go to him?
So what my conversation with Mannix the other day was is that the first trip we might just go to him because it might be cheaper. It will be cheaper.
Yeah, right.
Well, there's not no might to it. It will be cheaper for us to go to him. He's gonna charge travel time. So it'd be better to have him ready whenever he does come here to
make he's located where else?
On the west side of Austin. I can't remember exactly where. Right now, he's going to be really, really busy with session going on. We need to get a hold of him probably, well, from there it'd be too late to get a hold of him earlier than later, but they're fixing to get rolling down there. But probably going to get, his time is probably going to get worse for this bad, I should say. I mean, he's going to get busier here in the next couple of months than he is probably right now. And then he's going to be busy until the session's over. So here we're going to have to go to him to start with.
So, Commissioner, I may go back to the issue about the flood plain, which I agree is not accurate. The current regulatory lines are problematic. The modeling that A&M is doing for this county, it's already funded, wouldn't cost y'all any engineering costs. It's going to help you with that. So it's going to be very active. And several of the federal regulatory agencies that would have say over that are going to be involved in the project. And so I'm not saying if y'all want to spend money with engineers, go ahead, but you're going to have some resources that are available within the next 18 months or so that are going to be very accurate that might help with part of the issue that the county attorney's talking about.
And letter of provisions, they call them loaners. They're really not hard once you have the maps, once you have the base flood elevations established, and once you kind of have a map of the area with those, you know, base flood elevations carried over, you know, filing for a letter of map provision and getting things to fix their lines is actually a pretty easy process. It seemed to me in the past, at least. I know the folks at the mound did it. Mm-hmm. The hardest part was getting the paperwork ready to submit it. The submitting part seemed to go fairly smooth. Leon Junction's another place. I mean, they've got the entire Wittenberg store where they have Mount Cowboy Church in floodplain. I'm from up to 931 out there in front of the Wittenberg store.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, water gets that high, we got lots of problems.
Yeah. It turns into fashion materials.
But I mean,
the floodplain thing is such a. Yeah, I struggle with it because it's very philosophical in that, you know, what do we have? I guess really, we have the right to tell people what they can do. You know, some guy owns 500 acres and he put a restriction and said, you can't build anything. That's where I really, if he wants to put a loafing shed or something down there, I mean, he probably lived, you know, his family lived on that property for five generations. They know in the residential, I get, you know, that's a protection thing. But yeah, I think we've got to really have a philosophical. I lean more toward letting people make their own decisions on their own properties until it affects somebody else. That's a tough one.
Yeah. Well, I visited with the county attorney and Mr. Mannix about getting down there as well. So we'll get that hopefully scheduled in the back. So pretty quick. All right. Number D, CDBG MIT. I have that one.
No. So we got our $3.14 million.
So somebody, which I assume was probably the judge, based on the response.
send an email, because everybody's been asking, what's the status? What's the status? When are we going to get, when are we going to hear? You know, we've answered all of the RFIs months ago. We've asked and asked about, are there any additional questions, and this, that, and others. So on Wednesday, January 22nd, Judge Miller got a email. It said, the GLO received the inquiry below regarding the status of the Coryell County Regional Mitigation Program application. Blah, 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 blah. While we don't have an exact time, we anticipate news about this application to be released late February, pending any unforeseen circumstances.
2025?
Yes. Okay. It does not have a year. It just says February. Late February.
Okay.
Late February. That's my best update on that.
All right. Thank you. All right.
That's a step closer we want to step to.
The FEMA DRs 4781. Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much
yeah.
County Judge and Road and Bridge.
Yeah. All right. When we move down to number 8, update on construction projects.
I didn't attend a owner's meeting last week, but I think everybody who showed up the other day saw that they're getting pretty close. To, I think there was a security meeting.
There was.
Okay.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Good, it went great. I went through and looked at all the camera positioning. I'm going to add back the camera for the main vestibule area. On that east side, we just didn't cover everything. Got the blessing from the district court to 2JB courts and then the security side. So,
were the scan things available at that time?
No.
Okay.
They're still a little ways off on that. Okay. I'm still working on that.
I'm going to go down there and check in on them. The only other update I really have is the $3 million question. When will we get internet service? I'll tell you, I mean, at least it's promising. I have received confirmation that our order is in. I received confirmation they got this little timeline that they provide me. And we're in the technician phase, and they said, we're just checking to make sure you're the contact for the technician. They'll have to have availability to get in the room. So I'm going to start this week applying some very kind pressure trying to get that moved along. Mr. Bell and I communicated last week. He was thinking that it might be prudent, and I don't disagree, of maybe engaging with NextLink right now, because during the construction phase, we ran conduits from where the NextLink node was and from where the Brightspeed node was, and brought both of them up into the server room so we would maybe eventually have redundancy. It's not going to cost us anything, I think, to reach out to NextLink and see what their schedule is. You know, when we evaluated the two suppliers, Brightspeed had a higher bandwidth, if you will, at a lower price than NextLink. They're just not as, so that's why we were engaging with Brightspeed. And we did approve that contract, so everything is in motion. So let me call our sales rep up, Alan, and see if I can get a definitive answer from her. But I mean, so far it looks good. I mean, it's rolling along pretty fast up to this point.
We did a walkthrough for all the furniture as well, and with the architect, and we're just missing 4 lamps. The little work lamps that go up underneath.
Yeah, I know. I saw the list he put out. There were a few chairs, and I didn't know.
Well, he's changing 2 chairs.
Yeah. I didn't notice it, but apparently the lobby chairs, they were different.
Yeah.
There was different colors. And I looked at them and didn't, you know, because it was one of those ones that Byron said, when you see it, you'll see it.
Yeah.
And I just kept looking at them going, I don't know what's wrong with them.
Yeah, they put put them together all at once instead of the ones that go in the JPs,
right?
A different shade, and they matched or didn't match it. So they're working on it.
All right, so I'll follow up with right clean, check into next clean, and then should have a, if I get any kind of an update, I'll just send an information only to you guys that kind of an idea where we stand on that.
The best that I thought about, and I don't know if it'll work or not, but if you find out that it's going to be a while, you know, one of our options, I think, would be just to get the regular old excellent service, just get regular old, you know, what
right, yeah.
What sheriff's office is running on right now is working just fine. It's just regular old excellent service.
Right.
So that's, if it looks like it's going to be a, something blows up, it's going to be a 90-day deal, we might be able to get that in there for short order. Or I don't know what the status of the Sheriff's Department's internet is, but if there's a fiber run from their building to the new building.
Yeah, can we piggyback off that? Yeah.
So. All they're using, all the 440 and JPs are using it today, but they're not using a lot of
right.
Big files necessarily. It's just remote desktop connection for data. It's not. And I'm pushing big files.
I agree.
Number 9, consider action. Is the port construction project signed?
That means at this time.
No. All right. Number 10, considering our local agreement with Erath County for having been made.
I didn't have the old one, but I looked at it with $100 a day is what I read. Yeah,
I think the old one was a little.
Sorry, how much was it? I thought it was $100 a day.
Yeah.
I think it was doubling the price.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're catching up. Okay, so they were in that. Like I said, I didn't have the old contract to look at.
Wait, I mean, it looks just exactly the same to me. I didn't wait until the side, but the font's the same way. That's fine. I think they're just exactly the same.
Yeah, and just change the per day.
Did Erath present this?
Yes.
I think our current one runs out in May.
I think this said March,
which is renewable every 12 months, unless we decide to make it.
Yeah, it looks like the county judge from Erath County sent it over to Bill Miller.
Have we been in Erath?
Sure.
Have you been using ARA?
Yeah. We are currently at
7.5. Hey, there's usually 8
or we got 11 up there.
Well, yeah, today we got 5 over there. ERA's not one of our go-tos, but they do help us out in a pinch on occasion. They're very selective on the inmates that they take.
Based on your limited knowledge, you would like that option, correct?
Well, I would like to have an option. I think having a contract, we ran into some issues before with at the point that we get to an emergency situation, it's nice to be able to have somebody to call to be able to move somebody immediately.
Right.
And they're close enough we can do that.
Okay, that's a big one. 45 minutes away.
Yeah. No matter where we go, how the inmates, we're looking at an hour drive pretty much, no matter what. And it doesn't matter even if we take the county's touching us.
No.
We still run at the same amount of time. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There is a copy of this.
Yeah.
And do read.
99.
I'd like to go ahead and enter in a welcome agreement with Beaver County for having me in motion.
I will second that motion.
And Mr. Bell, I'd like to open and interrupt. Obviously, you've read it. Have you recalled anything in there where we're guaranteeing the number of beds?
So, it's our value. Pretty standard on A for in there.
Great. Well,
I know I hadn't read it today.
And it does look.
I don't think we're seeing anything about any guarantees anyway.
Yeah,
they're not guaranteeing it. Nobody got any space, and we're not guaranteeing
them. But I know we currently don't have any. We pay as we go.
Right.
I'm trying to get away from the guarantee business. We have one county that we're, currently guaranteeing X number of beds. We haven't got below that number, so it has really not affected us. But if we were, we're sure going to pay for that number of beds, whether we have that number of inmates yet or not.
I would hate to go into a contract with a guarantee number if they're going to restrict the inmate they take.
Right, absolutely.
If you're going to guarantee beds, you're going to take whatever we have to see.
And for instance, Johnson County, I call Johnson County, they take every inmate I've seen.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I don't mind a guarantee like that, but if you got a following restriction on a deal, I wouldn't be nowhere near for a guarantee.
Yeah, you rather very, very picky.
Yeah, they've got it in their contract.
Yeah, yeah. But
Some of the things they're going to be picky about.
Yeah. No existing medical.
Yep.
All
right.
I think it's about it's in here, but I didn't lay them side by side and go through the provision, but I didn't. It looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
The amount.
Yeah, a motion. From Commissioner Taylor, a second from Commissioner Weddle. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. All right, number 11, consider the employee handbook. I've asked for this to be put on here numerous times. We've got some updates, obviously, that need to begin here. And then there's several departments that have questioned different things. One of the things that I think that we could remove is part of number 3, if you have it with you. Because it's an employee handbook, the hiring, the recruiting jobs and such, I think could be removed because that's between department heads and the county, I guess. And then bereavement.
Give me a little more. I'm lost. If you said chapter 2.
Sir?
You said chapter 3.
Yeah, 3.1. This is employee handbook.
Yeah, I got it.
And I just don't think the recruiting and the job posting portion needs to be in here because it's not like an employee is going to be doing that. It's going to be between an elected official. I understand the importance of it. There's no doubt. Cooperation and working together, I don't think it needs to be in there. I think all the age requirement, the background check, all that kind of stuff needs to be. Looking for one. On bereavement, I think it's a little excessive. I went back and looked at other counties, and most of them are 3 days on family. And 6 to 8 hours on, someone that's not immediate family. We've got 40 hours on the family portion. 9.9.
The page.
But the main thing is to get all department heads looking at it, talking about it. Go ahead, sir.
47.
I know that there are most departments have their own rules and regulations that they've implemented as well, but I think that it's important that we have one countywide as well. And it was in the old handbook. It's just I've looked at other counties and nobody got 40 hours.
So what do y'all think about, my note on that was about, you know, stepchildren. I don't know. If you're going to do it for a child, I mean, if you're married to someone that has a child and something happens to them, that's, for a lot of people, that's just like their child. I don't know. I think that would be. I don't have any, so I shouldn't stress it, but I know a lot of people that do have stepchildren. Aunt Susie's one thing, but a stepchild, that's pretty, that can be doing the home.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the note I had on that section.
I'm
thinking about this one a lot. We've been kicking this thing around. Here's just my thoughts for the court. First off, it is the court's responsibility to put out a handbook, and we haven't done one in over probably 3 or 4 years. Unlike a corporate world, which I live under, in the world of government, you have elected officials. And elected officials can run their departments pretty much the way they see. So this is really a tool. It's not the law.
Right.
You know, we don't set the law for them. We just give them some guidelines and some general things that they need to do. Except for when it comes to federal law. When it comes to things like FMLA, I don't care who you are, an elected official, an appointed department head or anything, you better follow those type of rules. And that's why that's very important that that's in the handbook. Federal law versus anything to do with local county bereavement, local county deal this, right? Those are all guidelines. So I think we make this big deal about it because I had a question here if we had any elected officials. So, Mr. Bell, you're one.
I am one.
So what in this handbook would alter in any way that you're currently managing your office?
I have gone through it and all 65 pages of it. Very thoroughly.
I've gone through it twice.
And so I concern myself with things that. So to answer your question, very little.
Very, very little.
But there are things, but I have the misfortune of also being one that gets calls from other department heads about all kinds of things. And, you know, whether it's disciplining an employee, what they can and can't do, because they serve them. So here's a concern. I'm an elected official. I have an employee. Let's just say I'm district clerk. You know, here's what you heard from guinea pig. I'm district clerk. I got an employee that's not acting right. And so I want to discipline that employee for violating something that I told them to do, you know, whatever. And I take action against that employee. As an elected official, my right to discipline that employee, but the employee handbook says something different. In my mind, as the county's attorney, that creates a potential claim So those are the kinds of things that concern me. And so, like you said, it does make it very difficult because you have elected officials that have autonomy over their office, and you have a policy that's been adopted by the county. And so I read it through it. I highlighted a bunch of stuff, and I made a bunch of little comments in red to remind me why I was concerned about that section. But those are the kinds of things that I flagged. I'm confused about a few things because I don't understand holiday pay. I'm confused about some of the accruals. Some of them are calendar, some of them are fiscal. I don't know why there's a difference, except for maybe budget-wise, I guess. But maybe that's something the court should consider. Maybe we should, maybe they should be all be fiscal. Fiscal, not fiscal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are just kind of things that I, and as you know, I mean, nobody ever pulls this out unless there's a problem.
No.
Now, you know, if you're in peace in the valley and everything's rocking along and everything's good, nobody ever pulls this out. But it's a problem when like I said, when there's a difference between, because I don't want there to be a difference. So if, as the county's attorney, I don't want there to ever be a difference between the way, I don't want there to be anything in writing the court has approved that says one thing and have an elected official do something different with an employee. That's.
Yeah, and that's going to be impossible. You know, that's an impossible thing to prevent. I've thought a lot about this too. You know, we have, I think it's 19 separate elected official departments, if you will. And again, I just keep going back to, you know, this is a tool. There are, and that's the problem. I've talked to several too. There's some departments that go, oh, I'm so glad that that rule's in there, because now I can, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's others going, what are you doing telling me that I can't do that, right? And so I keep going back to saying some are going to really utilize that. You know, and Brandon, I just will say, I've gone around this county, and the thing about elected officials, many elected officials in all of the state of Texas have never held a job in corporate America or have had to follow really strict handbook guidelines and been dictated to them. So guess what? They do not know the hiring practices. They do not know how to do progressive discipline. This county, if I went around and asked, you know what progressive discipline is?
I'm well aware.
And in all actuality, that's what we should be doing.
I get those phone calls.
You get a verbal or a written warning, then you get a written warning, and then third, you know, offense is usually automatic termination. Then you're progressive clean.
And the verbal warning should be documented.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, again, we're still going to have, you know, certain departments that are going to ignore it, which they're currently doing anyway. But there's other departments that absolutely love some of this, you know, guidance. So, and the other thing is, this is fully amendable. You know, we could sit here and just pick white out of the chicken poop all day long, but it's never gonna be perfect. But sometimes you have to do it, and then if something comes up, we can always amend that section. I don't like our holiday pay. I don't like the way, I mean, it's very crazy. I don't like comp time. I don't like any of that. It's very hard to manage.
One of my biggest problems is I can't tell for sure if this policy is a change from the previous, well, from the way the department is currently administering holiday pay. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I can't tell if this is a difference from the way they're doing it.
Okay.
I don't know. So my concern would be, you know, creating a claim or no claim exists or should exist. And I can't tell for sure because the way, so there's a section in here about, there's a section here about gap time also. And I assume that
Well, I don't assume. I know for a fact there are a lot of department heads that have not reviewed this entire document. I just got through with it Friday because it's 65 pages. And when I read it and I study on it and I think about it and I go back to the previous sections and the latter sections, try to make them all make sense in my mind. So it takes time for me to read it. I mean, I read a 65 page document in short order, but reading it,
I've read it twice and I fell asleep five times in my chair doing it.
Yeah,
it is. It's a very boring read at times.
So there are
I talked to sheriff's office this morning about holiday time because I got thinking about it this weekend and I got myself confused again about it. And even after talking to them about the way they currently do it, I'm still not smart enough to know, because holiday time and holiday pay is mentioned in here in about three different sections. And I can't make them all make sense in my mind. Because in one spot it says, no compensation will be paid upon termination for sick leave and or holiday time. But then there's another section, and I'll have to find it because I don't have it wrote down. It's like five or six, seven pages further down in here. It's down here. Wait a minute, that's it. Well, it's gap time. It's a different issue that I have a question about. It's gap time. It's in 8.19. You go down here to section 9, which is the leave and pay section. There's another section down here. It's on page 48, where it says observe holidays, and it talks about holiday pay there again. But then there's another section. it says holiday time work will be carried on county records as actual numbers of hours worked. I.e. 8 hours, not at time and a half. But then there's another section up there that says you will not be paid for holiday time. Those don't, I can't make those.
Was it when terminated, though?
If I got holiday time, if I worked a holiday that I didn't get credit for, I thought that was purpose holiday time.
Whether you're terminated or not.
Whether you're terminated or not. Yeah, I mean, it's just like comp time. I mean, we should get.
Yeah, I'm not sure that holiday pay is, I mean, I'm
don't know
sure whether it's a privilege. Big difference.
You didn't get it at a rush day.
It's paying.
But I think that when you talk about privilege in life, you're thinking of 8 to 5 Monday through Friday employees.
Okay.
And we have other employees that are required to work on holidays that don't have that option.
Yeah, and I think, and by the way, you do have somebody sitting in the back there that can probably answer many of these questions. And I don't know you guys, I know Mr. Belt is aware, I don't know the rest of the people in the room, you know, first off, this was created and mashed around and, you know, everybody in this room got advanced copies and any suggestions. Then it was sent to PAC for their review and blessing. And then upon Mr. Belt's request, we sent it to, our employment lawyer who went through this thing and redlined and marked up and changed, and if I'm not mistaken, we pretty much accepted all of the changes that, well, is that correct? We pretty much accepted all the changes that the lawyer recommended. Our employment attorney, which that was Mr. Belt's, you know, request, was if we have a problem in one of these, that's who's going to defend us. So they've given, you know, our attorneys, who get paid to do this, and I know we paid them handsomely to review this. You know, they're like, okay, legally you're good now. And I think the 207K pretty well trumps every, you know, even if it's in here, if it's the 207K applies, you know, here again, it might trump our local rule that just, you know, slipped through because of a, you know.
Like I said, when you left the state, you didn't get a holiday time. You either used it before you left or.
So it was like sick time.
Right.
Yeah. Use or lose it?
Yep, basically. Use it during the time of employment.
So there is a, let's see.
I would say that if we gave off employee one for a holiday, and employee two, we made work that holiday. We didn't pay them anything other than they could accrue that day. And then whether we terminated them or we allowed them to retire or resign, they're owed that pay. If we paid the other one for a day off, I think you would have some litigation.
Doesn't that go into their comp time pool? Because
I don't know. That's, I don't.
I, that's another thing I know we've got to get a handle on. We got some huge. I think that the rest didn't hear about
it. It is.
Yeah. You can't accumulate 5,000.
What section is that?
That's going to bankrupt the
company. And I can tell you, we had the same issues in my previous employment. We had holiday time that we accrued. We had comp time that we accrued. We had sick time that we accrued, so on and so forth. The county just made a decision that all time accrued was comp time, period. You worked a holiday, you turned in your piece of paper, it went to comp time. Could not have more than 1,000 hours of comp time period on the books at any one point. Same thing with sick leave. Sick leave was 940 hours. At that point, it cut off. If you were terminated or resigned or whatever, sick leave was not paid. You were not compensated for that, but you were compensated for the other because it was compensated.
Right.
And exempt employees or did not have a chance to approve that.
So this is where I kind of go back to my original point. We have 19 different departments, so it's very hard to craft. And then we have PO2, which Mr. Whitby in one is a department head that doesn't quite have the 100% autonomy, Roan Bridge being a known one of our largest ones.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the autonomy to run their office as they see fit. They're supposed to run them as Roan Bridge as the court sees fit, and as in Mr. Wood's case, as Mr. Farrell sees fit, or actually the judges, I guess.
Well, Mr. Woods actually got probably more autonomy than any of us. The way that statute's written.
And that's exactly what I'm saying. We have 19 different little silos, and so I think we have to, as we say, tweak it. So we currently, if they work a holiday, it goes into their comp time, right?
No, the people that work the 12-hour shifts get a holiday pay every pay period. It's their annual salary. It's their daily rate. So you take their annual salary, you get a daily rate. Times that by however many in October, however many holidays are accrued. This year it's 14. And then we divide that by 24, and they start making that October 1 as part of the new budget to September. People that leave or come in after then are prorated based on how many, so people that leave, they stop right then. People that come in after October 1, if they've missed 5 holidays, then they're prorated. They're only given 8 holidays instead of 13 or 14, whatever it is. And then however many pay periods it is until the end of the fiscal year.
So I saw something
that's
about that.
Extraordinarily fair.
I saw something about that in here somewhere. But then it confused me that it talked about it in a different manner in a couple other places.
And currently the only people that get that are jail staff and deputies or sheriff officers that work 12-hour shifts only. So like in the jail, Mr. McClinton that has people that only work 8 hours, they do not get that. Or the 10-hour shifts, they do not get that. There are a few, actually, I think we've moved away in the deputy side, there was a few 10-hour people that were narcotics side that was doing investigation stuff. They were getting it until here recently, and they moved them to the 10-hour shift just like everybody else. So it's currently only 12-hour shift people in the sheriff's department and Jeff. And that's why we went to the holiday pay for the people that weren't here, is because they, what was happening is if they were scheduled to work on a holiday, they were giving themselves comp time for that. But if they were scheduled off for that day, they were also giving themselves comp time. And it was building up a lot of comp time, and it was not necessarily, I mean, it's not their fault they weren't scheduled to work on a holiday, but it also wasn't, you know, so right. That's the court, I believe, went to that in 2016. And it's worked fine since then. We have a spreadsheet that we are constantly updating every time somebody starts, quits, all that.
So the lieutenant nodding his head, sounds pretty fair the way it's being administered right now.
Is that what this policy says?
I was not prepared to answer that. I don't know. I'm not
going to answer. And I, like I said, I just finished going through this Friday. But that issue and a couple of others, and I think we need to pull out every section in the handbook that mentions that, you know, just do a search for holiday, whatever section, because it's in about three different, maybe more than three different sections, and compare those and make sure. Because, you know, as Commissioner Weddle said, our attorney did review this and make sure that it was legal, but I'm not sure that they have any idea of how we're actually doing our holiday time and where that would have stuck, you know, where that would have become a question in their mind about what does this, you know, what does this mean and what does this say and how are they actually doing it? I don't know that that issue ever came up to them. I don't know that they have thought about it.
And I've looked at it, but it's also something that I do every day that I probably just was like, oh, yeah, that's fine. You know, and so I can double check that. And
so
I haven't looked at it in a while. I'm not going to look at it.
What? 8.19 has a section about gap time. I thought that we had crossed that bridge and burned it.
That's going to be the 207K part.
Does 207K say the sheriff may elect to pay gap time? I thought that our policy was we were not going to pay gap time.
I'm not going to say yes or no because I don't know that off the top of my head.
When we amended our 207K policy, with the 171 straight 207K, I thought that part of that was no gap time.
No pay for gap time.
And so this sentence says the sheriff may elect to pay gap time.
I think that stemmed out of this. We have a section in the budget for overtime. And I mean, so in other words, that definitely gives the elected official the autonomy to dole that money out within the payroll system. How he sees, you know, until he runs out of money. That therein lies the problem. It's just like overtime. He can authorize all the overtime they want. But once you hit that limit, you know, so you better manage that. I think it's $100,000 we had in that section that needs to be managed. And so
shall also have the conversation of we set the salary for that person to work their shift up to 171 hours, period. No overtime. For 168 to 171, no gap time. And I mean, I thought that y'all made that decision and that it was clear, because I don't know. Because this says the sheriff may elect to pay gap time after 160 hours work in the form of compensation rather than comp time at their discretion. The sheriff doesn't need to be given comp time between 168 and 171.
Well, I agree.
So,
and I do believe that that's how it was meant. I mean, that's what we agreed on when we went back to 171.
I really think that paragraph, and I don't know because, and I mean, I understand the daunting task that Ms. Weddle had redoing our employee handbook. And
She completely reorganized it, which was fine because it definitely needed reorganized. The problem is, it makes it difficult for me to go back and find what that sentence said in the old handbook and compare them because I just got to go find it because it wasn't in 8.19 in the old handbook. May it have been. I don't think so, but I mean, I guess it could have been. Because I've got these both up on my computer screen side by side, the old one and the new one, and tried to go through. And after page 25, I gave up and I was like, I'm just going to have to focus on the new one.
Yeah.
I can't do this anymore because I'm cross-eyed. And so by the time I got to page 42, which is what 8.19 is on, I didn't have the old one pulled up next to it anymore. I was like, I can't do this. So I don't know what the old one said. I think that may be a paragraph that
was in the
that just needs out. I don't know.
And this has been in process rental for a while. So it could have been one of those that was in there. And then when we redid 207K, that part just did not get out. Once again, that's something that not a lot of people talk about or even understand, even though they think they understand 207K. It's not easy to understand and comprehend sometimes. So we can definitely look at that too. We can try to find it in the old one and see what was there and if that was something that was just copied over and we need to take that paragraph out.
Then my final question for everybody is, how long and how many times, because most of us have had this since November. How many times can we kick it back and say, okay, oh, anybody got anything else? Stop. The page stuff. That's right, dude. It's amendable. This is not, how hard is it? If we tell you, hey, we've gotten a lot of complaints, let's take that section out. They're easy. Yeah, it's a one, it's a vote, and it's a, let's take that section out. It's not working. This one is working. Or, ooh, we found another thing we probably need to, I hate this. It's a new document. But it truly needs to be, and ours has been dead for 4 years.
Well, I agree. I mean, there's stuff that needs to be in here. I agree that it's a living document. I mean, there's things that need to be in here that I think would curtail some behavior and potentially save the county in the future on some things, county vehicle equipment, things of that nature. Because it's not really in the only one or not written out as well.
Yeah.
I'm trying to pull out a lot of
revisions that I wasn't.
Got it here. I just couldn't find it. And figure out how to turn the volume loose. Anyway.
I certainly wish in my 40 years, well, it's a good and bad thing. I wish in my 40 years in the private sector, I had the ability to say, hey, I'm not going to enforce that one. But I didn't. I just enforced them and moved on down the road. I mean, they did give us a little, discretion on time off, but you can't always predict. That's where those, that you become a human being and you listen to people's story and you can make exceptions to the rule. You just have to be equal and fair across the board. That's the big thing that many of our folks don't realize is if you do something for one person, you have to do it. But you can still do it. We do it all the time. But if this one decided to close their office a few hours early or something here and there, we're not going to dictate that. Mr. Matthews, would you feel more comfortable if we waited until we had a full report to?
I've put it on here multiple times to get people to get engaged in it and give their feedback. And I've gotten feedback from three.
Would those three be willing for you to divulge who? You want to hear all the time is, oh, I've heard from so-and-so, and people will say, well, so-and-so called me, and they got a problem with it.
Yeah, Roden Bridge.
Got a problem with it. Show up.
Yeah, Roden Bridge.
Oh, I got Roden Bridges.
Yeah. And I answered all of his questions. Roden Bridge, the tax office, and then we got the request from the DA's office in a letter. Of course, I did visit with the county attorney earlier, but three,
And it was really funny. I visited with the tax office too, and one of the comments that Mr. Brothers made was, wow, there's some things in there that I should probably start doing.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, I'm not saying that it's all bad. I'm just saying that I talked to three. I heard from three people. And my point is, we do need to get a handbook in place. And
our two largest departments are the ones that have obviously the questions, being the sheriff's department and Roden Bridge. I mean, thus, you know, all these questions. Because they both operate under a unique set of rules. You know, Roden Bridge, because of the Department of Transportation, they have certain, you know, rules on their drug screening and physicals, we don't require physicals for other jobs.
Yeah, the law enforcement side is something.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But they didn't give us one.
Yeah.
A lot of times the department, they want to know what vacation is or sick, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's that I know off the top of my head, but I can't point them to a thing on the website that says that they have to take my word for it or Kristen's word for it or somebody else's word for it who, you know, may not have it completely correct. And I've also remember Tom told people that just because this is here doesn't mean that that's the end all be all. Mm-hmm. Each elected official is responsible for their department, and if they decide to close their office early or something, then that's up to them as well. So,
but there's things in here like the time keeping as well. And I visited with the treasurer's office, visited with the auditor's office, visited with those three departments about it too. We do pay for a time clock system, and very few people using it. And then, of course, I know there's some complications in between how law enforcement time is kept and Roden Bridge time is kept, but I think it can be, I mean, the company created it, they can modify it. There's means of them modifying it to where it works for us. Because I don't want to see us getting something like, you know, McClendon County had on their timekeeping. And I mean, they got sued. It was a big deal. Uh-huh. So, anyway.
I can have that discussion with all y'all later, too, about the timekeeping system, because that's going to come up again for renewal pretty quickly. So, I know that's not what today, but that's something too that I can discuss with.
And then, of course, I got two folks that asked the treasurer's, or not treasurer's office, tax office, and Roden Bridge asked about PTO time versus, you know, but I look back and I haven't been able to find a county that operates on it. Not saying that has to be that way. I'm just, you know,
For 2.5 years, I've talked about, you know, two things, and that's mm-hmm. one, our timekeeping, mm-hmm. you know, how we do not manage that correctly. And of course, that includes paying forward instead of paying in arrears. When I first heard that, I was like, never heard anything like that. Pay somebody ahead of time is basically what we do. It's crazy. And then PTO versus, I can just tell you that my personal experience managing sick days, and I did that for a long time. You know, just you come up and you hear every story there is versus a PTO. If I got that phone call in the morning, somebody says, do you have PTO? Yep. Okay.
It doesn't make
sense. I don't care what's wrong with you. I don't want to hear that you were up all night. That doesn't matter. You got the PTO. The day you get the PTO is then the day we have a problem. Then I start docking your pay. Then I start writing you up. And then you're out the door if you continue that behavior. It's so simple. But you know, the way we give them accrual of the sick time is, and trust me, been there, done that. When I was an hourly worker, I didn't see the difference between a sick day and a day of PTO. You know, that's what happens is people wake up morning, I need the day off. So they call in sick. Versus PTO, they might come to you at least the day before and say, hey, man, I've got to go to my kid's school. You know, he got in trouble. You know, can I have the time off? Yeah. But if we don't have that, then what they do is they just pick up, I'm sick. So it really puts supervisors and managers in a spot of, now we still had, if you call in and you miss more than 3 days, you have to have a doctor's note. I let people go because of that. They refused to go get one. I said, well, then you probably weren't sick, were you? It's never going to be perfect.
Commissioner Matthews, you mentioned something about vehicle usage earlier. There's on page 29, I had a question regarding the IRS regulations. I didn't look them up. There's no question in the future. It says a vehicle must be clearly marked in the license plate. Is not a clear marking for that purpose. It says exclusion for a clearly marked law enforcement vehicle. Blah 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 blah. But I assume that applies to law enforcement vehicles that are unmarked, that are approved unmarked vehicles. I mean, investigator vehicles, undercover vehicles, vehicles of that nature. Those are certainly unmarked vehicles. I assume that the IRS regulations don't exclude those vehicles, but I don't know the way this reads, they do exclude those vehicles.
What do you think, ladies? That's a hard question.
Oh, Randy, you want to touch? Sorry, yes, sir.
This section about IRS regulations about marked vehicles exclusion from. Something about kind of vehicle use is in compliance with IRS regulations, and for purposes of defining a qualified non-personal use of a vehicle, a law enforcement vehicle is defined as a clearly marked vehicle. But we certainly have a number of clearly unmarked vehicles that even have regular license plates on them. They don't even have exempt plates because they, you know, they purposely. And I think those vehicles still qualify, but I don't know. That's not the way this reads. But I have not looked up that IRS regulation to see. Is that a change, or is that something that's going to change? Or if somebody's driving home an unmarked vehicle with regular Texas plates on it, is that not going to be?
You saying county issued vehicle versus unmarked, the verbiage should be changed?
Well, it just says clearly marked vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, I assume it's that this section is out of the regulations that determine whether or not an employee gets something put on their W-2 regarding use of a vehicle.
Yeah.
Personal use of a vehicle.
Exactly.
I just want to make sure there's no question in the future regarding unmarked vehicles with regular plates.
Because we have a lot of those. I mean, not a lot, but a half dozen of them or so. Oh, we have a dozen. I saw every CID vehicles unmarked and probably has regular old Texas plates, although they don't say exempt from the plates. Well, some of them do. The one, the lease vehicles, well, I can't remember now.
They're,
lease vehicles don't. They just got regular old Texas plates, don't
right.
They?
Yeah. There. I can't remember.
I don't
yeah. Regular
so I do know plates. That none of them are getting taxed on the vehicle.
I know they're not right now. I didn't know if there was a change of some kind.
I haven't been told that.
So my note that I put on that paragraph was, or an approved unmarked vehicle with a question mark. Because I think that an approved unmarked vehicle qualifies. I mean, it still meets, well, I don't know. I didn't read the IRS rate. Finally,
what section is that?
This is on page 29 in section 6.3.
Okay.
It's the third paragraph from the end.
And yeah, my revision is on page 30. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But mine is, I think, an older. We've had quite a few revisions since.
Well, mine is, this is the January 13th email. It says Coryell County book revision 9. It still says 9/30/24 down at the bottom, but.
Right.
Yeah, I think mine's the one in between. I think this just highlights perfectly that, I mean, there's probably some cleaning up we could do with our vehicles, you know, just to make sure that I get undercover. Absolutely. Don't know why CIDs wouldn't be marked.
Well, I think what Mr. Belt is talking about particularly is, I don't remember which county it was. It was out in West Texas, that literally there was no place to live there. I mean, it wasn't a very populated area. The sheriff's department employees were driving three counties over in a take-home car, right? And the IRS came back and taxed them as a benefit for them using that in a non-official capacity. It's the drive home.
Right, it's a perk.
Was
versus
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what that particular section is talking about. But I also think there's something in there too, Mr. Bell, about employees that are on call and and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty convoluted, I think.
Again, we have law enforcement, which is some very unique set of rules, and then of course you got then road and bridge, which are our two departments that have, I guess, the most county vehicles. All of their equipment is clearly marked, so we're good. None of them drive their vehicles home.
Some of them do.
Some?
Yes. The foreman's the supervisor. The ones that are on call, the I don't know what, I don't know which, I couldn't tell you which ones or how many. I just know they do. I don't know what I mean.
Most times it's two. And they trade out. The two for one.
Oh, okay. So very rarely then.
It has something apparel, and nobody has ever addressed with my office as far as taking them home and all that kind of stuff. But that's why I'm kind of like, I don't know the answer to that. Of course, payroll used to be in the auditor's office, and the auditor knew everything at that point. Not saying that Mr. Wood doesn't, but he does.
I think he knows it all. He just doesn't want to share it.
But when payroll came with me, I don't know everything. So. And I'm okay with not knowing everything.
I did pretty good in comprehension, but man, I'm sitting here looking like, man, I read that twice, but I don't
remember. It's 65 pages long.
Yeah, well, yeah, it still hurt. A tremendous amount of it is that federal, military leave, way.
What page is the, what is that? Well, I think we already talked about that in my. So there's a few places in here. Maybe more than a few. Miss Wedler's question for you. Like, so like in 2.5, 2.6, it says preferably in writing, preferably in writing. Then there's other sections that say in writing, in writing. And I guess my position would be that we should take preferably out in all of those instances that we legally can, and which should just be in writing. And if you have a religious accommodation in 2.6, if you require an accommodation, contact your elected official, appointed official, department supervisor, or human resources, preferably in writing. I think that should say in writing. If they're requesting an accommodation for a religious purpose, I mean, I obviously, if we're coming back to this section, there's going to have been a falling out regarding whether or not it was done or wasn't done appropriately. So I think we should just, if we can, under the law, require it in writing. That way there's no question about exactly what they requested, exactly what religious practice they're claiming, exactly what accommodation they need. We don't have it. Well, yeah, Susie told me that she needed to go to that church deal, but I didn't think it was that big a deal. So I told her, no, we shorthanded, she had to work. Or, you know, and then Susie comes and says, well, I told her that it was the day that this deal's got to happen, and this is my religion. This is the day every year that this happens on, and I told her that. It's like, preferably in writing. It's like, no, that needs to be in writing. Every time, if we can, make it be in writing. Okay. And then I don't know what 2.5, it says, that's the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. It also says if you require an accommodation, please contact blah, 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 preferably in writing. I mean, if you're pregnant and you're requesting an accommodation, it's not like, I mean, if you're out sick on FMLA and you laid up in the hospital, that's one thing. But if you're pregnant, you know you need an accommodation because you went to the doctor and they said you was going to have to, you know, not be on your feet as much or whatever. I mean, that's something that they ought to be able to put writing also, I would think.
And usually we require that any type of change that way anyway, correct? I mean, from an FMLA paperwork standpoint, yes, we require it in writing. Both of those that you're referring to were written by the legal firm as their recommendations to the handbook.
Okay. That didn't come from it. Because the ADA section, it says preferably in writing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's the... I don't know if the law says that or if that's just.
They're probably protecting themselves. I mean, this is a very bizarre, but when you talk about the law, they're very bizarre things, right? What if somebody is unable to write because of their accommodation? Right?
Yeah.
So they got to be able to give a verbal. I mean, that's their, the 1% of 1 million that might lose.
I can tell you that law says that your HR department will assist them with completing the paperwork.
Yeah.
So,
you know, and one of the other things that we can certainly, Brandon, you know, I've never worked any place that we did not have standardized forms across the entire company for request for time off, request for accommodations. I mean, there are forms that, as a manager, I would say, where's your form? I need your request. So if we don't provide them a form, then you're going to get all kinds of things that just say, I want off.
So do y'all want to do a workshop over this or not?
I don't think we need to, when everybody can be here. Even the department heads have had questions.
Do y'all have a particular date, time, have grief, how?
You're
able to make.
Yes, sir.
I know that
You talked about that there was only a few people that got back with you on those things. I can tell you how that was expressed to me. Here's a new employee handbook. So I don't know that people understood that, hey, you need to review this and come back to me if you have any comments.
I think all the department heads got it and said it's for their review.
Okay. I don't know. I'm
yeah.
Telling you how it's expressed.
That's what the email said.
Well, and I've come across that with other things that we've done too here.
Sure.
In our platforms and stuff like that. They were just told to sign it.
Yeah.
So we will, my treasurer's department can handle that. We will individually take them if we need to and sell these department heads. We'll take that on ourselves.
I mean, every new employee does it
14 days out
in writing, but they received it. And it's up to them. And trust me, I don't know if you do that.
They might not understand. They need to review it if they got questions.
But we will
get it done. And then that way everybody can come in. When we don't, just
department head knows it's for review and when the first stuff is. And then that way, nobody.
And if they don't show up, then they're just going to do it.
That's right. And I will make sure that I will make sure that we tell them that they need to review it. If there are questions, they need to double check it. And so whenever that workshop is set, just let me know and I can start that process.
I'd make a motion to set up workshop on February 10th.
Say.
That's 2 weeks.
February 10th.
10th.
What time?
9 a.m.
9 a.m. Sounds great.
Thank you.
That's Monday?
Yes, sir.
It's a Monday.
You be here?
That's not when y'all are at school, right?
No.
Okay.
No. I'll be in San Angelo Steer Show, actually.
Oh, you will?
Yeah.
All right.
If we go to San Angelo Steer Show, maybe we'll win it.
We won't have to go. Well,
maybe you can do it on a special day, then it really doesn't matter versus tagging it on the 11th.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that needed to be by itself. That way we're not trying to get everything else done and we go through this thing correctly.
You don't need to put it on Valentine's Day. That'll mess up everybody's business.
Well, what about the prior week? 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th?
But the 6th, you got any shows?
Yeah, I'll be in Fort Worth next week.
Oh.
It's their show. I'll be here Monday the 3rd, but I'll be gone 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. I'm both 3rd. Wouldn't give them enough time to go through it all.
But they've had.
All right.
All right. The 19th.
We'll be gone.
Yeah, we will be. 24th.
We do it on the 17th.
What day is President's Day? What day are we off?
17th is President's Day.
Yeah.
Can't do it that day.
Yeah. And I'm actually going to think going a day earlier.
24th. Fit everybody's schedule.
It's mine. I bet you, Ray. You guess.
I think so. It shows why I see in San Antonio that day on the phone, but I think it's checking out that day.
All right. Make a motion that we do it on the 24th of February.
But I'll be home Sunday on the 23rd.
Got a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
February 24th at 9 a.m.
Yes, sir.
Workshop.
Yep. All right. We'll move down to number 12.
So, sir. There are some.
He said all in favor.
All in favor.
Aye.
He's the only one that didn't vote.
Move down to number 12. Pay bills. Got bills in the amount of $2,738,429.01.
Like most pay bills.
Motion second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same time.
It was 9 a.m. on the 24th.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Reports. We had the grand opening ribbon cutting, which was great. It cleaned up the youth fair. We know that. We had the fish fry for the soldiers Saturday,
Friday,
and pretty good turnout.
Out.
And that's all I got.
Yes, open house ribbon cutting. I thought it was awesome. I thought we had a great turnout. Got a lot of really good feedback from especially if those from the community who did come and see it. I mean, it was really, really good feedback. So I appreciate all y'all's support. And since Bastion's not here, pray for rain.
There you go. Keith?
No, I'm good.
Right.
Or I don't pay me, man. I'm just going home, no puck.
Motion to
follow my meeting, I think.
Anything
was time to
second, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. This is
my second.
And we're going to put down the things up there just like that.